Hi everyone, my name is Andra Stanoyo and you're listening to the Healthy Debate Show here on UK Health Radio, a real good radio. A qualitative analysis on children's perspective on their well-being and what makes a happy life for a child using UK-wide focus groups highlighted that feeling loved and having positive, supportive relationships, particularly with friends and family, including having someone to talk to and rely on, were consistently stated as top priority for children to have a happy life. Today we will discuss about how to raise happy children with Rachel Davis, TEDx speaker, musician, NLP practitioner, and mom of two wonderful boys. Hi, Rachel. Welcome to the Healthy Debate Show.
Hello. Good morning. I'm so grateful to be here and I'm really excited about our conversation today.
Absolutely. Well, Rachel, thank you very much for taking the time to come and speak with me. I know you're very busy. I know your boys are keeping you very busy. So I'm just very excited to hear about your experience in raising them, but also your professional insight into many of the things that we will discuss today. Rachel, tell us a bit about your professional journey, and I'm very, very intrigued by raising a tiger. So tell us a bit about that.
Okay, so it's a big question, so I'm going to do my best.
It is, yeah. Start with the simple version of the response, Rachel.
Okay, so I am the creator of something called the Raise a Tiger program, which is, I suppose, like a culmination of, I think it's my life's work, is a combination of all of my personal experiences that I've had through raising my children from what can only be described, I suppose, as a broken place, I suppose. That's kind of come together with all of my professional experiences and my love of music. And I brought it all together. And it's a program that helps parents raise mentally, emotionally, spiritually healthy children who can live to their fullest expression. It's like an extravaganza of personal growth, if you like. But it's a little bit different because the work that I do is kind of unique because it works on two very distinct levels. So the first part of it is that it's very much focused on the personal growth and the personal transformation of the parent. As the great Krishnamurti says, that the only hope for humankind is the transformation of the individual. And for me, if you want to raise like happy children, there is all of the support and all of the help should be there for the parent to be able to create that environment and that container for a child to be able to thrive. So we work very much on the personal growth and transformation of the parent so that they can be that safe space or safe container, if you like, for the child. But then what it also does is it teaches children the very same concepts that we teach to the parents, but through music and play. So it's intentionally raising the children, intentionally using language and music and play to teach these very complicated concepts to children in a way that they can understand. But the glue that holds it all together is the connection. And really, ultimately, that's what my work is focused on. It's about helping the parent connect to the child. I would say I drag parents down to their children's level because really that's where the gold is. It's in that connection that a child then absorbs the information through play. And let's face it, in today's busy, crazy world, we are so disconnected. We are so disconnected from ourselves, from our children. So anything that we can do to increase that relationship or improve that attachment between parent and child is golden. So that's what my Raise a Tiger program does. It really focuses on all the things that you can't see that are going to make the biggest difference to your children's life. Thoughts, feelings, courage, energy, self-belief, you know, all of the things that you want to teach your kids.
So how did you get to think that there was a need for this type of program? What were some of your past experiences or professional experiences that led you to believe that there's a need for Raise a Tiger program?
Well, As I mentioned earlier, I think most of my work was, it came from my own personal experiences. So before I did what I do now, I had a corporate career. And when my children came along, like many parents, I kind of came to this understanding that my career was kind of sucking my soul, and I really wanted to show my children that, you know, you could be happy and you could do something that you loved and that you could live into your dreams. And music had always been my very first love. I'd started playing piano at the age of 5. You know, I wrote my first song at 13. And while that had never sort of, I'd never really been encouraged with that as a job, because music wasn't really considered a career back then. And my parents wanted me to, you know, earn money, if you like.
Yes.
When my kids came along, I felt like I just felt intrinsically that I needed to change that. So when my first child came along, I went back to work initially, and then I started running music sessions for under fives, which, quite possibly one of my favorite things I've ever done in my life. Sharing your joy. Sharing your joy and passion for music with small people, and like messing around with instruments and music. And there was obviously lots of cups of tea and, you know, like custard creams and things for the mums. And it was just joyous. But at the same time as all this was going on, I was also coming from a place in my personal life where I kind of had what I could only be described as a bit of a life collapse, I suppose, Andrea. So in the space of just a couple of short years, I lost my brother very, very suddenly at the age of 37, which at the time kind of woke me up a little bit to wanting to get out of a marriage that was not serving me. I'd been in an emotionally and psychologically abusive situation for quite some time. And this sort of woke me up and made me realize that I wanted to get out. But then I found out that I was pregnant, so I decided to stay. And before long, I've got another child, a second child. And then my father died very suddenly. And that was the final
drop.
Yeah, that made me realize that things really, really needed to change. And it was actually some quite bizarre spiritual experiences that I had following the death of my father that led me to my work in personal transformation. So at the time, I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. My children were like all over the place, you know, in terms of emotional meltdowns and challenging behavior. One of my children struggled with transitions a lot. The other one struggled with perfectionism and needing to be good. And it was just just one big hot mess, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And one day, because I have a child that has since actually had a diagnosis of ASD and ADHD, he really struggled with just getting out of the door and, you know, just following any kind of instructions. And I discovered purely by chance that music would reach him where my words were failing. So if anybody who's got young children who are listening to this, who will know this, right? When you're trying to get your kids out in the morning, you're like, get your shoes on. The amount of times I must have said to my child, can you please put your shoes on? And it was just becoming really stressful. Obviously, you know, I was struggling with my own thoughts and emotions. And once I realized that music was going to go in, I was like, ooh, I found a way to reach him, you know? So initially my work started with just writing songs to help me out as a parent. So I wrote songs to get them to brush their teeth, and I wrote songs to get them to put their shoes and coats on and put their stuff away. I wrote songs for separation anxiety and bedtimes and all those little tricky moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what I loved most was that we were actually sort of taking all these stressful, tricky moments and turning them in to fun and love and connection. And it meant that my children were sort of starting to look forward to the moments that had initially caused us lots of stress. So around about this time, I had been meditating, I suppose, for a couple of years by then. I was retraining in NLP and hypnotherapy, and I was absolutely fascinated with the world of beliefs and personal growth. I devoured books on spirituality and mindset. And as I was going through this process, I was thinking, if I can teach my children to put their shoes and coats on in 5 seconds, like, what else can I teach them with music? And that's when I think everything came together, and every single lesson that I was learning myself. So to kind of put some context to this, we're going back probably only 6 or 7 years, and I was singing Wheels on the Bus in a village hall. And now I obviously I have my TED Talk and I have an online program all over the world. I have albums and my life has just changed beyond recognition. And so every lesson that I have learned along the way in order to completely transform my own life, these were exactly the same lessons that I knew that I wanted to teach my own children. So it started really more as a personal thing, as to what lessons do I want to teach my own kids? And it's just sort of spiraled from there, because of course I started taking my music my songs into my music sessions with other people's children, and everyone was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing, like, can you write a song for this? And it's just escalated into something that I'm so incredibly proud of.
But it looks it sounds amazing. You know, I've never heard about anything like that before. I did hear about the healing power of music in general. I've worked for many years with special needs children, so I definitely saw the benefit of that. But I never actually had any conversation with someone who has thought about this in such detail. And I remember when I was starting to work with children, that was back home in Romania, I used to introduce classical music as background for my lessons. And that was a bit too much, you know, a little bit too revolutionary almost for the times, because there wasn't apparently a need to keep the lessons as lessons, and music was not understood as a tool. But I've managed to convince, you know, my superiors that that's a good option. And I saw a transformation in the children and the way they calmed down and the way they started to connect with me. It was a different level. It was a different type of connection just because music was in the background. So definitely I can completely understand, you know, why this was seen as almost like a natural step for you, isn't it, Rachel, considering your background and love for music? So definitely a good step forward for every parent that is struggling to find some ways to communicate with the children. So let's talk about parenting and what was challenging for you. What do you think were top three challenges for you as a parent, if you haven't presented them already? Because you did mention quite some things about parenting.
My hardest things. Well, I think parenting's really challenging for everybody.
Encourage me, Rachel. You can't put me down now.
Oh, Andrew, you would be great. You would be so great. Like, I think we have, and I think a lot of it is about expectation. And we were talking a little bit off air, weren't we, about expectations. Mm-hmm. And I think so often, you know, we have an idea of what we're going to be like as a parent, and we have it all together. And then suddenly, boom, we get this little soul who is potentially nothing like what we are expecting. And I think like we think that we're just going to read to our children from the book of life and our children are going to listen, and it just isn't like that. It's that, like, it's probably, I would say that parenting and our children are probably the best opportunity we have for personal growth and opportunities to grow if we choose to see it like that. They are absolutely our biggest teachers. So coming back to your question, my biggest challenges, I think, first of all, let's look at the obvious one. So first of all, I've been raising my children single-handedly for the last 7 years with no help, financial or otherwise, so from their father. So that in itself presents a whole load of challenges where you have to be, in a sense, both parents. There's a logistical element to it that's challenging. And then, of course, you have all the emotional stuff that goes with that, with their ending of a marriage, you know, that for someone that I had so much love for, but ultimately we had to be away from. So there's that kind of, that element of it was incredibly difficult. And I think any parent that has more than one child will also know that when you have more than one child, particularly if they have very, very different needs or different personalities, like switching between the two and managing that can be extremely challenging. The other thing that I found incredibly challenging was just the loss of identity that I think you go through when, you know, particularly if you give up a corporate career, or, you know, we give up so much for our children. And I think there's a huge amount to be learned in that, because I think so many of us are giving at the expense of ourselves, particularly as women. We are trained or brought up to be kind and to be givers, and, you know, but so often that can mean that we are giving at the expense of ourselves. And obviously that needs to happen in the beginning because our children require so much from us. And our children are very demanding and very good at getting our attention, and they will do that by whatever means necessary, whether it's good or bad. So I certainly found in our family situation that there was quite a lot of behavior that was, it was challenging for me. I found their emotions particularly challenging and their meltdowns, because ultimately that would be triggering unhealed wounds, unhealed stories, like the things that was turning up for me in my parenting. You know, you hear lots of parents talking about it. I know anyone listening is just, you're going to relate to this, that when you start parenting your children, you hear your own parents. So I think the next challenging part of it is breaking the cycle of perhaps what you're doing automatically, because 95% of our behavior is happening completely on autopilot based on the programming that we receive in the first 7 years of our life. So basically our parenting voice generally comes from the way that we have been parented. Now that's wonderful if you have been parented in a way that was great for your own mental and emotional well-being, or was, you know, or is in alignment with your values. But I think in many cases that isn't always the case. So it's that challenge then becomes our ability to be able to parent with what is actually going on in that moment and be really aware of what our children are bringing up in us that is then requiring our attention for our own healing, you know? So in answer to your question, the logistics and the parenting, the dealing with my children's challenging emotions, behavior, and, you know, their control, the way they tried to control things. And I think just lastly, just the loss of myself and the loss of my identity as a person and what I needed to do to get that back, because ultimately as parents, our job is to become the model. And if we are giving at the expense of ourselves, what we're teaching really is that to become a martyr. And for me, teaching our children to live to their fullest expression and to live a wholehearted and happy life, it starts with us and making sure that we are living a wholehearted, happy life, you know?
It's interesting because you mentioned the loss of identity, and I've noticed this with many people around me who, since they became parents, they just identify with the mom or the dad role, and that's it. There's nothing else apart from that. And that's a bit scary for someone like me, for example, who doesn't have children, because, you know, I'm quite connected with who I am as an individual now, and I kind of like what I'm doing and what I've become and my plans. And it just sounds a bit claustrophobic, to be honest. And it's very encouraging for me to, you know, meet people like you who have managed to go past this or go through this, actually, and get some learnings from this and still manage to, you know, go back to their identity or maybe create a new, a better identity, a more... it's very interesting that you felt this way, because I've noticed this quite significantly around me, and it was a bit concerning. But apparently there is hope, Rachel.
There is always hope.
You gave me a bit of hope today.
Oh, thank you. It's honestly probably the most common thing that I see when parents come into my container is they've just forgotten who they are. You know, they've lost sight of, you know, their... who they were before they went in. They've become disconnected from their joy or their creativity. And like you say, they step into this role, which, to be fair, in the beginning, you have to do. It's all about providing for your children's needs. And it's then finding yourself in amongst that. And as you say, you have this opportunity to create a whole new expression of yourself, an updated, with all the lessons that you learn from your children and from the whole experience, that you can come out of it stronger, wiser, kinder, braver. And ultimately that's the desired outcome, I think, keeping the essence of yourself. But
no, absolutely, because you're not any good if you're not in the right place, right? You're not helping your children. You know, children need to have structure. Children need to have people around them who are you know, fully present. And if you lose yourself in everything that's happening around you, what are the chances that actually you will be able to support your child to grow in an environment that's emotionally healthy? So let's talk about that, how to raise emotionally healthy children, because this is a big question, Rachel, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm going to come back. I think it's always going to come back to the same answer, is we raise emotionally healthy children by making sure we're working on ourselves and our own personal growth, so that we learn to model the correct way of handling challenging emotions, dealing with difficult people or behavior or situations. You know, we have to show them what we need to do in order to do that. We have to fit our own gas mask first, ultimately. And
yes,
I think somebody, it's what's the quote that I wanted to say? Being the change that you want to see in your children, I think, is the biggest thing. Because as we said earlier, when you lose yourself, when you're exhausted and depleted, and all of the things that come with children, the frustration, you know, the these expectations that we have of who they should be, what they should be able to do, how they should behave, and all of these things, because ultimately everything just is, all external stimuli just is, you know, people, events, things. It's the meanings that we are attaching to things that is often where most of our stress lies. So for me, raising emotionally healthy children means that we have to learn how to not just give ourselves what we need, because I know that whenever we lose our shizzle, it's always because we haven't given ourselves something that we need, but we have to learn to become present. Now, I say this from a place of not being a perfect parent. I don't think there is such thing as a perfect parent, and all the lessons that I teach came from the mistakes that I made. But I genuinely think, you know, those first early years of parenting, I was so trapped in my head with racing thoughts and ruminating and reliving traumatic experiences. It's very difficult to then be aware of what is actually going on. And with our children, we have to work what is actually going on in the moment, rather than what we're projecting or expecting onto our children. So it starts with filling your own cup. It starts with, you know, the basics like nutrition and sleep and connection with others. But then it starts to look like, okay, if my child is triggering me, what's happening is that I am then going to lose control of myself, which means then I'm going to either shout or get angry, or perhaps, you know, anger is an incredible way of allowing us to behave in almost outlandish ways, totally justified. But underneath anger is always an emotional wound or fear in some way. And so the work for us in raising emotionally healthy children is making sure that we are doing what we need to do to be present to, and then do whatever work is necessary to undo those emotional wounds, those negative mind reels that we have going on, and which is predominantly coming from our own upbringing
experiences.
And of course, life is death by a thousand cuts, right? So, you know, we gather these experiences along the way, and we create this sort of false self or ego. And for me, it's about undoing that and allowing ourselves to step into the limitless, magical, glorious, love-filled being that we were in the beginning.
Rachel, I'm very excited about what's coming next, because I really want to challenge you on some of, positively challenge you, Rachel, on some of the things you just mentioned. But before we continue, let's listen to valuable information from the station sponsors, and then we'll come back with Rachel to discuss about acceptance, challenging behavior, empathy, and music, and how to educate through music. So we'll be back in just 2 minutes.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, Make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back with Rachel Davis, TEDx speaker, musician, NLP practitioner, and probably most importantly, mother of two boys. She's the creator of How to Raise a Child, How to Raise a Tiger, sorry, a program. And today we are discussing about happiness and about the children's well-being and how can we as parents make sure that we raise children who are self-aware, who are empathetic, who are happy, who have a good positive experience with their childhood. So before the break, we were discussing about lots of things, about challenges, the challenges of parenting, what is positive, you know, in the parenting experiences. And Rachel was telling us about how to raise emotionally healthy children. Now, one of my big question marks when I'm thinking about parenting is the conversation around fear, Rachel. Mm. I know that some cultures, and I'm going to say this on air, including my culture, so you see back home, fear is something that is used to educate people. And personally, I don't like it, to say the least. So many cultures use fear to educate children and use it as a way of, like a punitive way to just make challenging behaviors less challenging, to say the least. So what's your view on this, Rachel? Am I right? Am I wrong? There isn't any right or wrong. What do you think?
I completely agree with you. So for me, fear is really, it's not really about education. For me, fear is about control. When you look at how parents or anybody tries to control somebody, that is always coming from an energy or a place of fear and stress. And we use, you know, we're using fear or control to try and control somebody else. Ultimately, you can't control anybody else. The only person that you really get to control is yourself. And if you are coming from that place, and it always comes down to intention for me and the energy that you're coming from. So to explain what I mean by that, there's an incredible book called Power Versus Force by Dr. David Hawken. And in it, he talks about the difference between coming from a place of fear or coming from a place of love. Now, all emotions actually have a frequency that can be measured. And I'm sure it won't surprise you to know that joy and love are the very highest frequency that there is. And right at the bottom, sort of guilt, shame, and right at the bottom is fear. So that's a very low-based vibrational frequency. And of course, if you think about real power, you think about real leaders, which really, as parents that we are, we're there to guide and lead our children rather than control them. Power always really comes from an energy or an intention of love. So instead of trying to control, which is really about limiting, what we're wanting to do is to come from an intention or a place of love. I actually wrote a song about it, Andrea. It's called Love is the Answer to Every Single Question. It's the very beginning workshop that we do. Because if you come from this, oh, by the way, you can find that on all major record providers under the artist La La Tigers. If you come from a place of fear and you use fear to control or to manage your children, ultimately, what you're going to do is you're going to create distrust. You're projecting all of your fears, which are insecurities, guilt, shames. You know, your child does something, and basically, there's always a moment just before you lose control of yourself and the anger comes in, because anger comes in as a defense mechanism, you know, to avoid us feeling a vulnerability underneath. And it's normally fear or pain. So quite often, if your child does something, there's a moment just before you get angry and use fear or whatever to control your children. And it's often, oh, my child's not listening to me, which at some point in your life, you've perhaps not been listened to, that you're not a great parent, your child doesn't like you. So there's all of those vulnerabilities that are happening underneath. And that's when the anger comes in, and that's when you try and use fear and control. But ultimately, what you're going to do is you're going to damage the connection and the relationship that you have with your child. And when I think about what I want for my children, I know that I want my children to come to me and be the first person that they talk to about all the things they're going to have to navigate, not just as young children, but as teenagers and as young adults. And I don't think that I had that relationship with my parents. I was frightened of my father. My father was, you know, I have no judgment for my parents. I understand exactly that they were doing the very best that they can given their life experiences. And I genuinely believe that about everybody. You know, yes. If you knew better, you would do better. Yes. And there's lots of intergenerational trauma going on in my family from war and all sorts of things. So there is no judgment. But at the same time, ultimately, I have to choose, am I going to carry on that, or am I going to choose to work with everything that I know to be true? And instead of coming from that place of like reacting, if you like,
yes,
choosing to respond in alignment with the things that I know to be true, my values, the things that I know that are important, and more importantly, the outcome that I want. Parenting with that in mind, what is the intention that I want for the outcome of the relationship? And therefore, is my behavior supporting that? Am I aligning up my behavior with what I want as an outcome, which is ultimately a great relationship with my children? And I want my children to, you know, not have to undo all of the things, because that's really what personal growth is. It's like an undoing, isn't it, of all the stuff that ever happened to us. Ultimately, what we want is to raise children that don't have to recover from their childhood. And when you parent with fear, what you're creating is all kinds of mental, emotional, societal problems. I mean, I read a statistic the other day that 1 in 3 mental health problems begins in early childhood.
Yeah.
Well, that comes from, and most of that is then being passed on by the parents, which is then coming from our parents above. So it's an intergenerational problem, but ultimately we have to stop winging it and we have to start owning our stuff.
Do you think it's also a question of accepting the child for he or she's trying to be, rather than shaping them into this? No, shaping them into our expectations, because you mentioned expectation a bit early on. So do you think acceptance is something that can be truly achieved? Because I know it sounds like a fabulous philosophical concept, but when it comes to do that in practice, how
it's
easy
a practice.
It's a practice.
I mean, it sounds like the nirvana is never reacting and never, you know, and never shouting or never having emotions. And that's not, you know, that's not real. And for me, growth is messy. Growth requires us to let go and express our emotions and show our children healthy ways of being able to cope with them. But what you say about acceptance is absolutely right. We have these expectations. And when we're projecting our expectations, whenever what is happening in the moment is not meeting up with our expectation, that is always where the stress lies. So can we ultimately ever get to that point where we're in complete acceptance? And I think, again, it's going to come back to the same. You'll see a theme emerging in my answers here, Andrew. It's like, you can't really accept another until you're accepting and loving of yourself.
Yeah.
And it's bringing that self-awareness into your parenting. And ultimately, yes, their practices, just like happiness, you know, confidence, courage, all of those things, they are ultimately, I think, a bundle of practices that you do to keep yourself in balance and accepting yourself as much as you accept your child is a big, big part of that.
When you were talking, I was thinking about the way we position ourselves as parents with the children. Because I often hear parents saying, well, I know better. And obviously I can understand why this is relevant, because obviously you have 30 plus or 20 plus years more than the child. There's a life experience there that obviously the child doesn't have. But do we actually know better?
Well, I would imagine sometimes we do. I mean, yes, you know, life experience counts for an awful lot, doesn't it?
Mm.
But one of the things that I have also found to be true is that I don't know all the answers. And particularly when you're parenting children, you kind of get a handle on something, and then your child goes and grows and changes, and they developmentally leap, and suddenly the things that you were doing before don't work anymore. And so, you know, you can have techniques and tips and things that help you in your parenting, but ultimately what is required is for you to be able to grow and adapt and become flexible. And that is, and focus on the relationship, which is ultimately going to be the container for all of it. You know, we have to, if we can talk to our children, and our children know more than we think. I have often found that some of the best ideas for handling a situation have come from my children.
Yeah.
But quite often we don't give them the ability to have their voice.
Yeah, the credit.
No, that they, yeah. You know, they're also incredible human beings with their own experiences. And I think sometimes we're so busy going, no, we know best, this is how we do it. But if you relate that to yourself, is that how you learn? By somebody telling you this, is that really how you learn? Or do you really learn by making mistakes and then, you know, adjusting your own behavior accordingly? I think personally, that's how most people learn. But I think we're so busy as parents protecting our children from the consequences.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's been a term recently, isn't there, helicopter parenting, where you're sort of standing over them, never allowing them to make any mistakes. But mistakes, failures, that's how we learn. I remember someone saying to me at the beginning of my starting my business, they said, you know, fail and fail big. And that is just a great lesson for life, because if you look at anybody who has any kind of success or growth or has achieved anything, most of it normally has come out of the mistakes or the failures that they make. And I think there's a big lesson for us in sitting down with our children. And I say, what do you think? What do you think is the right thing to do in this situation? And perhaps letting them do it. I mean, obviously, providing that it's safe, but also allowing them to come up with their own consequences as well. I mean, I'm a bit funny on consequences, because I don't agree with punishment. I do think there are natural consequences for our children's behaviour. So, for example, if they don't put their shoes on and they go outside, the floor is wet and cold and they might tread on a stone. And if they don't put their clothes on in the morning and, you know, put it in a bag, you go to school, and they get to school and they realise they better put their clothes on, otherwise all their friends are going to see them in their pants. I mean, so there's some very natural consequences that children will then come to that conclusion much quicker, much more easily, if they're allowed to experience it in a safe environment, than if you're just constantly telling your children. And it also allows your children to start to trust themselves, which is ultimately what we want.
What always has fascinated me about children is the simplicity of their thoughts.
Yeah.
And by this, I mean, we as adults, because we have so much life experience, we might have a tendency in some situations to overthink and not see the truth that lies before us. Whereas if you allow a child to have an input, you'll see that very often they have the most simple and the best solutions. Something that I remember is we had someone that passed away in our family, and we were trying to find ways of breaking the news to the children, who weren't very close to the person, but they were close enough. And we were like struggling, what do we say, how do we present it? And we finally found a way, but it came from the children, because the children asked, well, where is that person? And we said, well, unfortunately, they were God now. And they were like, oh, so they're little angels now. Oh, that's fine. Sounds good. And they moved away from that. Mm-hmm. And it lifted all this responsibility from our shoulders, because it was them giving themselves an explanation that worked for them. And we never thought about put it so lightly. We always thought that we should give them a proper explanation, when the reality was that that was our need. It wasn't theirs. So that was a really good lesson that happened a while back. But it just shows you the simplicity of children's thoughts and, you know, the valuable input that they have. I'm looking at the time, Rachel, and I'm a bit annoyed because it doesn't seem to, we don't seem to have enough time. But let's have a few minutes of break, and we'll hear some commercial messages. But I really want us to focus on the last leg of this episode on parents, because you mentioned quite a lot of the times doing this show that parents have to make some efforts to, as much as possible, to understand themselves, be self-aware so they can be better parents. So let's take a few minutes of break, and then we'll be back with Rachel Davies to discuss more about parenting and how to raise happy children.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back with Rachel. We're discussing about parenting, about raising happy children, which I know it's a big topic, but we need to start from somewhere, and we started today. So Rachel, tell us about how can music actually help parents and children trust their inner voices and trust their instincts and use this inner power to, you know, get on with life and have a happy life.
Well, I just think music is just the most incredible tool for teaching children anything. You know, it's in every single culture. Music speaks to us on a cellular level, doesn't it? I mean, it makes us feel emotions, and it delivers messages, it unites us, it builds connection. In fact, there's a research shows that music lights up the whole brain. And particularly with younger children, what it does is it teaches things like patience and collaboration. You know, there's so much going on in music. There's different instruments playing different parts, and then there's spacing, and there's volume, and there's tone. But ultimately, what music can really help is music has the most incredible ability to go straight into the unconscious mind. And it's been shown recently with research with Alzheimer's patients that even with Alzheimer's, that the part of brain that stores music is never lost, even with Alzheimer's, and it actually lights people up. So I think music is an incredible vehicle, first of all, for increasing connection, because let's face it, as parents, you just don't get out much anymore. So I know when I was doing the music for the program, a lot of the work was about making sure that it was as interesting for the parent as it was for the child, because the mum doesn't get out much anymore. She's forgotten who she is. And I want to get her back in touch with that, right? So, you know, a lot of the songs that I write are, you know, there might be house tracks or they might be rock stuff. We have an air guitar workshop, for example, and we have Bad Wedding Dancing Championships. Like crazy stuff. But all of that is very intentional, because what I want to do is I want to get the parent back in touch with themselves, moving their body, right? Because when we move our body to music, it always feels amazing. We are releasing trapped emotions that are held in our energy field. We are just, it creates lots of feel-good endorphins. So music is going to do that, first of all. And the second thing that it's going to do is going to put you in a situation of play with your children, because that is the best way that we can learn. And for any of you who'd like to know more about this, I do have a TED talk. But one of the things that I mentioned in it is that, like, if you put information into the vehicle of a song, right, it just goes straight in. So the example that I used in my TED talk was that I began singing the alphabet. So I started singing A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and I asked the audience to sing the next part of the song. And the reason I chose the alphabet was because it's quite a complex piece of information, really, for if you think about it, we learn that age 3 or 4, and there's no context, there's no story, it's just 26 consecutive letters. And yet you put that into the vehicle of a song, not only does it go in, but you can recall that information 30, 40, 50 years later. And so the work that I do with music is as much about all the things that I've already mentioned, the connection, the movement, the fun, the increasing the relationship. But ultimately, I want to be sowing very powerful messages into a child's subconscious mind, because once it's in, it's in.
It is. When you started singing, I remembered some commercials that just stay with you for days and days and don't leave your mind, is it? So the message through music, it's amazing because it just stays there almost without your conscious input.
Yeah.
Rachel, I'm looking at the time again.
Yes.
And it's that time.
Okay.
So we have to say goodbye. But before we do that, I really want you to share with us some of your online links, like where we can find you, because I really want parents and everyone who's interested in your programs to get in touch with you. So tell us about your online life, Rachel.
Brilliant. Okay, well, you can find me at lalatigers.com. You can find me all over social on Lala Tigers, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. And my Raise a Tiger program is we work in cohorts. And one of the things that I didn't mention that I think is really, really important is just understanding that the reason why this is all aimed at parents with younger children is because before age 7, your children are forming a lens or a belief system, if you like, that they are going to project onto everything for the rest of their entire lives. In fact, 95% of their behavior is going to come from the beliefs that are formed in these first 7 years of life. So if you would like to know more about me, please do come and find me at lalatigers.com. And thank you so much for having me, Andra.
Absolutely.
I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. And I loved every second of it. And I hope that this is just the beginning, Rachel, because I have so many other questions that I didn't get the chance to address you. So maybe we will reconnect a little bit later on in the year, and we'll see how we can continue the conversation about parenting and raising happy children. All the best in your future programs and projects, and speak to you very soon, Rachel.
Thank you so much, Andrea. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Let's listen now to a fun song that lifts up our spirits. Grace Kelly is the second single by the British singer Mika. It is the opening track of Mika's debut studio album Life in Cartoon Motion that was released in 2007. Until next time, may we hear only good things.
I want to talk to you.
The last time we talked, Mr. Smith, you reduced me to tears. I promise you it won't happen again.
Do I attract you? Do I repulse you with my queasy smile? Am I too dirty? Am I too flirty? Do I like what you like? Yeah, I could be wholesome, I could be loathsome, guess I'm a little bit shy. Why don't you like me? Why don't you like me without making me try? I try to be like Grace Kelly, but all her looks were too sad. I tried a little Freddy. I've got an entity mind. I could be brown, I could be blue, I could be violet sky, I could be red, I could be black, I could be anything you like. Gotta be green, gotta be mean, gotta be everything more. Why don't you like me, why don't you like me, why don't you walk out the door?
Getting angry doesn't solve anything.
How can I help you, how can I help were too sad. So I tried a little Freddy. I've got an answer to my